Good morning, everybody. I love seeing all those fists being thrown up there during the end of that song. It makes my morning. So thank you all for everyone who's tuning in right now. This is episode 44 of the Bitcoin Veterans Podcast. My name is Coleman. I will be your host this morning, and I am joined by Hunter and Jacob. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you doing, Hunter?
Man, I'm doing well, thank you.
Anything exciting happened to you over the evening or yesterday?
Got pulled into a meeting at my church, and they're looking to put a ham radio repeater on our church grounds. So that's really cool. We want to learn from this disaster that North Carolina is going through and kind of set up North Georgia so that we can kind of be a beacon of communication and give ham radio operators a repeating tower to bounce off of. So that was kind of exciting.
I always find it so fascinating how one little movement like what we're doing right now in North Carolina can just have so many tentacles that reach out and just touch so many different parts of the country and so many different people. So that's awesome. I'm glad to hear that. Go ahead, Hunter.
Yeah, I was just going to piggyback on that. The rippling effect is huge. You know, people are waking up to, you know, the needs of what happens when you have a disaster, whether it's, you know, trying to learn these mesh-tastic radios or ham radio or just prepping in general, just being prepared that, you know, understanding the government's not going to save you. So it's a big wake-up call for the whole country, I think.
Yes, it is. And we're making sure that people understand that. If y'all missed it, we had Shane, one of the founders of Bitcoin Veterans, on Mario Knoffel's, I probably said his last name wrong, so I apologize, but on his Spaces last night. And so he usually brings in quite a large crowd. And so Shane spoke for about 7 minutes. And as usual, Shane just sounds amazing when he's talking. But he really laid out for everyone who wasn't aware of what was going on and what we're doing in that area. So I'll post a link up in the nest of Shane's talk, and I encourage you all to take about 5-6 minutes to listen to it, because it was really impactful. It was very moving, so it was good to hear. But while we still get everybody trickling in, everyone's refilling their coffee, getting their water, getting the gunk out of your eyes, I want to make sure everyone understands the purpose and our mission as to why we do this show every weekday at 10 a.m. Eastern, and that's to defend the values that our founding fathers fought so hard for. And like we just mentioned, we are showing the power of decentralization and what Bitcoin can do to make a lasting impact on our communities. And so our goal is to change the country and get away from these centralized, tyrannical leaders. And by going out boots on the ground in North Carolina with Operation Gabriel, we're doing just that. We're showing people what we can do and how Bitcoin can impact their lives in a positive and meaningful way. So again, I love what we're doing. I love that we have boots on the ground, and I'm so thankful that we have all of you supporting us. We have raised over $115,000 in donations. So everyone give me a thumbs up, give me a fist. And that just, again, it is just amazing to reach that goal in such a short amount of time. So in case you've missed it, we're freezing the donations right now. We're not taking any more, just because we have enough funds to do what we need to do in the near term. Eventually, once the funds start to get depleted, we'll go ahead and open up that donation link again. But right now, we're going to go ahead and pause that. But it doesn't mean we don't want to stop spreading that message. So if you could just retweet that link, because every time we have updates from Shane or Jordan, Mike and Hunter or Randy, we're throwing it in that thread. So please go out there, share that. Make sure we're continuing to spread this message and make sure everybody knows what Bitcoin Veterans is and how we're going to change the world. So we still need help over there in North Carolina. We're still asking for volunteers. If you're able to be an asset and help out with the relief effort, please send us a direct message to the Bitcoin Veterans handle. You can reach out to me. You can reach out to Shane or Jordan as well, Operation Libertas. And as long as you're going to be able to contribute in a meaningful way, we'll definitely have your help. If you're not able to go out and physically work, but you know people that maybe have feed for farm animals, I know that that's one of the big things. We're also looking for cold weather clothing, generators. It's starting to get really cold out in the mountains. So if you have any connections in that capacity, please, again, reach out to us. But again, a huge thank you to everybody who's helped us with our mission and spreading this message. I really can't thank you enough for your help. I want to jump into something I saw last night. I didn't know that Trump was doing this, but there have been some just absolutely on fire video clips. For those of you who have no idea what I am talking about, Trump gave a speech at the Alfred E. Smith Memorial Foundation dinner last night. And I got to give it to whoever wrote his speech for him because it was hilarious. We have a clip. There's probably about a dozen clips that we could play, but I don't want to just spend the whole morning playing Trump's talking points. But we're going to play this one clip because I had to listen to it probably about three or four times because I just couldn't stop laughing. So, Jacob, just give me a thumbs up when you're ready to roll that. And I'm not going to give you any context of what he's going to say. Just listen to it and get ready to laugh.
There's a group called White Dudes for Harris. Have you seen this? White Dudes for Harris. Anybody know it? Are some of you here? White Dudes for Harris. Doesn't sound like it. But I'm not worried about them at all because their wives and their wives' lovers are all voting for me. Every one of those people is voting for me.
Their wives and their wives' lovers are going to be voting for Trump. Again, it was just an absolute banger of a speech that he gave. I don't know why I said banger. I don't think I've ever used that in a sentence until now. But anyways, it was a really funny speech. I encourage you to go up there and take a look at it. It was pretty good. He made some, took some shots at Peter Schiff as well. he had said that even if Kamala Harris doesn't win the president, the left is so woke that Chuck Schumer still has the ability to be the first female president. So again, it was really, really good. Did anybody, Hunter, you're the one up here with me. Did you see it last night?
No, Coleman, I missed it. I saw some of the clips on Twitter, but I didn't get a chance to click on them. But that's just classic Trump, man. His sense of humor is great. It just resonates with like the everyday guys, you know, just calls out what we're all thinking, you know. And so I love that he does that and puts that humor out there because that's what we need.
Yeah, it definitely, for lack of a better term, humanizes him. It doesn't make him just seem like a machine or just some talking puppet. It kind of brings him down to my level, at least. That's what I took from it. So I like when politicians do that. And I just like really, I like humor like that. So it really sat well with me. But the Bitcoin ETFs are on an absolute tear this week. They are gobbling up every single piece of corn that they can find. Yesterday, they brought in another 6,881 Bitcoin off the market. So from Monday through Thursday, the ETFs have acquired 27,470 Bitcoin, or the equivalent of $1.86 billion, billion with a B. And so that number is just absolutely staggering. So I wanted to go through and dig into that a little bit to see what they have. So if we add MicroStrategy into the ETFs, just because I don't see Saylor selling any of his Bitcoin anytime soon, so I'm just going to lump them into that. Between the ETFs and MicroStrategy, they hold a combined 1.2 million Bitcoin, or the equivalent of about $81 billion. And so we have to remember that the ETFs only started in about the middle of January. So they've been going for 9 months, 9.5 months, and they've acquired this much Bitcoin in a market that I think most of us can agree we would have thought the price was going a lot higher. So you start going down this rabbit hole and you start looking at the price and you start seeing the Bitcoin being taken off the exchanges. And it really, it was just very, very bullish for me to start going down this. So again, if we add additional 3 months to this, how many more Bitcoin do we think? And Hunter, you're up here, so feel free to chime in on this. How many more Bitcoin do you think they'll take off before they hit the 1 year mark? Do you think they'll get another 60,000 Bitcoin? Do you think they've taken 100,000? Like, what are your guesses, Hunter? How many more do they take by January?
I don't know. You know, the ETF thing is interesting to watch and try to unravel. I don't know if the looming election is going to spur some the ETF in one way or the other. I don't know. I feel like everyone's just kind of holding their breath and waiting for the election to be over right now and seeing where this goes. But yeah, it's interesting to see them gobbling it all up. Still makes me nervous. You know, I like decentralization, and I just see more Bitcoin being centralized in one area when I see that happen. So it makes me nervous. But yeah, wait and see.
Yes, I'll agree with that. But just from strictly a price point, and that's what I'm going down through here, is I don't think we're bullish enough for what's going to happen. Again, this week's been kind of an anomaly for the ETFs. They're going to probably take in close to 35,000 Bitcoin during the 5 trading days. But let's say that they just average out for the next 12 weeks till January, 10,000. It's 120,000 Bitcoin that they're going to be taking off again the market. So that number just becomes more scarce for everybody else. And remember, once we hit that magic number of about, if I had to guess, about 90, 95K, you're going to start getting a lot of FOMO from everybody sitting on the sidelines in retail. And I would expect that price to really take off after the election, regardless of who wins. I think if Harris wins, the price is still going to go up. It might not be quite as quick as an upswing, but I still think it's going to go up pretty quick. If Trump wins, that number is going to just be bonkers. So it's really interesting to see what's going to be happening in the price action over the next 3 to 4 months. And then if we just extrapolate this out for the next 3 years, how many more Bitcoin are these ETFs going to take off? And so we're going to really start getting a supply crunch, and we're going to have price discovery. So it was just fun just writing it down, looking at the different scenarios last night, and it was just, wow. It's going to be fun.
I got a comment on that. Like, do we know what kind of selling pressure is happening right now? Because I haven't been, you know, that connected to the Bitcoin price. I've been burned on, you know, technical analysis in the past. And it feels like the last time I was watching these ETFs really closely, there was a lot of like selling from Grayscale. And there seems to be always something that happens to offset the rocket ship of price action, you know? So I don't know. Are we watching what's happening on the selling side and not just the buying side?
Well, I was trying to look at Grayscale because that was the one I was worried about, because they're going to continue to sell, but they've started to flatten out. They haven't really sold as much out of their main trust as they did at the beginning of the ETF release. They have a lot of Bitcoin, but they've been pretty flat. I think they have about 180,000. No, I think it was 200,000. Give me a second. Let me pull my chart. Yeah, they have 220,000 Bitcoin. So they're staying pretty flat. I would imagine this number probably tanks a little bit, but I don't see it getting too much lower than 200,000. So you have a little selling pressure from there. But remember, whatever they're going to be selling, and once that price, again, I think that price is 90 to 95, definitely over 100,000. You're going to get everybody in retail, all of your friends that are just been calling you silly for the last 4 years. They're going to start buying in because this price, I think $100,000 Bitcoin is really tough to ignore. So once we hit that, I don't think you're going to see a ton of selling pressure coming through. I could be 100% wrong. Bitcoin always surprises me and a lot of others, but I think we're gearing up to have some really cool and interesting price action.
Yeah, 100K is definitely a magical benchmark number, you know, probably for the retail crowd, especially the FOMO win. So, yeah, I'm waiting for that moment, and I'm waiting for people to see that number on the ticker on their mainstream media, wherever they're, you know, getting exposed to their Bitcoin. But it's going to be definitely a huge news pop, and it'll be talked about when Bitcoin surpasses 100K. So it's exciting that we're getting closer and closer to that.
Yes, and I think a lot of people agree that the last bull run, the price was muted. A lot of people thought that the price was going to reach over 100,000, and it just kind of petered out right about 68, 69. And so I'm really looking forward over to the next couple of months. I'm pretty excited for it. Eomar, good morning, sir. How you doing?
Hey, good morning. Doing pretty well, thanks.
Do you have anything to contribute or any thoughts on the ETFs buying all this Bitcoin and what it's going to lead to in the future?
I don't really know the background info there. To be honest, after riding out the last dip, I don't pay too much attention to price action. I just await the inevitability of Bitcoin and DCA whenever I get paid. So
I got a question for you. At what number or what price do you think Bitcoin has to reach before you start getting the text messages from all your friends who were kind of doubters during this?
As a grumpy old veteran, I have about three friends and they already know about Bitcoin. So, I've already gotten past the point of, you know, the people that I actually care to orange pill I've worked on already. I don't know. I think if it gets to 100K, I think there'll be like people. I think 100K will be when like the uncontacted plebs start talking about Bitcoin again, because it'll be something. It's a threshold that's different, right? Like it's something that it's arbitrary really, but it'll be something that like sparks conversations, I think, once it passes 100K, and then eventually that'll be the new normal, and people won't talk about it again. And then when it hits like 150 or 200, they'll start talking about it again, and then, you know, rinse, wash, repeat.
Yeah, it'll be something about having a six-figure Bitcoin number. It'll be.
I'm looking forward to like supply shock as well. Like, if once people start wanting Bitcoin and gobbling it up, and the exchanges get lower and lower, then what's going to happen? That's going to be exciting too.
Coinbreak will have another circuit breaker.
Yeah, exactly.
No. Yeah. No one knows what's going to go on for sure, but it's always fun sometimes to speculate what could happen with the price and what will happen with the supply. But I really do think, looking just at what the ETFs are doing, what MicroStrategy is trying to accomplish, the next 12 months for sure are going to be really interesting with the price. And so I'm looking forward to that.
Are the ETFs buying like in excess of the money inflows? Is that what's going on?
Do you mean, are they buying more Bitcoin than what they're taking in right now?
Yeah, if they're supposed to be like one-to-one, right? So if I buy an ETF, they buy some Bitcoin. Are you saying, is like what's going on, like that they're buying more than is required by like their money inflows? Like, are they doing like a 1.2, for example? Like you buy one Bitcoin, they buy 1.2 or something like that. Is that what's going on? Or is it just that money's flowing into ETFs?
I believe it's just the money that's flowing into it. It's just been overwhelming for the last week. I don't know if they do a multiplier to it. I would suspect that they don't. But again, that's over my pay grade. So if anybody in the audience knows for sure, definitely come up here and let's clarify this. But I'm pretty sure it's just a one-to-one. But just the amount of volume that's been transacting over it has just been amazing. So again, if anyone missed it, yesterday they brought in, or they took off the market, 6,881 Bitcoin. And over the first 4 days of this week, Monday through Thursday, they've taken 27,470 Bitcoin, or $1.86 billion worth of Bitcoin.
Nice. I wonder if that's, I wonder if it's, there's been a lot of talks of lowering rates and stuff. So I wonder if people are, you know, starting to either see or at least hedge, you know, maybe this is the inflation resistant thing they keep saying it is. You know, I wonder if more people are willing to risk a little bit of money on it. And that's why we're seeing these inflows.
Well, when you look at the price of gold and what gold is doing, I see a lot of people talking about that. And I tried to reach out to Lawrence Lepard to see if he could come on here to explain this a little better. So if anyone has direct contacts with him, feel free to tag him and see if we can get him to come on the show. If not today, even next week, because I'd love to pick his brain. But the gold price right now is sitting at $2,730 for December futures. And so I've seen Larry speculate that they're sniffing stuff out. But to address your additional point, Eomar, I think we are in an easing cycle. We've seen a lot of the central banks. Someone's got a hot mic on. What's there? We go. All the central banks across the globe are starting to cut. We just saw the ECB did consecutive rate cuts. They haven't done that since 2011. I think the Bank of Canada is today or early next week going to, or is forecasted to cut 50 basis points. I think, again, we're forecasted to cut 25 basis points after the election. So it's just, I think people are seeing it. And I think we can all agree that the interest rates are just too high to sustain our debt levels. And I'm sure if I say that three times, we'll probably summon Joe Colasari because he doesn't believe that. But I, personally, I just don't see a way out of it. And I follow the belief of James Lavish that we are in a debt spiral and that there's no way out of it.
I agree with that assessment. On the upside, the gold miners are doing all right. Newmont Corporation, one of my things that I put money into. I'm not in the red anymore, so that's good.
Do you follow the gold market close, Eomar?
No, I mentioned on the other podcast, the 2017 cycle with Bitcoin, I was aware of it. Like, one of my coworkers owned Bitcoin and I kind of was watching it a little bit, but I was, more of a gold bug. So I was buying gold back then and gold related stuff. But then, slowly moved over to Bitcoin and, I still have gold related stuff, but again, I try to not trade stuff. I just try to buy things and let it sit there, because when I trade stuff, I just lose money. So
yeah, I'm 100% the same boat as you. Maybe it's just because we're crayon eaters, but that's I'm not smart enough to outthink it.
Yeah, sometimes I think I'm smart and then I'm like, then greed kicks in and then I hold something right back down to the ground. So
yeah, that's why Bitcoin's easy. Bitcoin and MicroStrategy, those are my only two. Good morning, Witz. I see you up here. How are you doing?
Good, thanks. I just had a couple of thoughts. I don't know how many are valid, but I'm just curious how many people are selling their Bitcoin and then just turning right around and putting the money in the ETF. People who are, I'm of retirement age, and if Bitcoin's going to go up 2, 3, 4x, whatever, I can certainly get a better tax deal if I sell it now and then withdraw it from an ETF later. And as far as funds buying their own Bitcoin or buying extra Bitcoin, I wouldn't be surprised if when BlackRock has a negative day, a lot of times they'll do $1 billion in trading and come out with a zero inflow. Sometimes I think they had enough just so they don't have a negative day, so it looks better for PR. Thanks.
Yes. So to address your second question, I have heard people say that they believe BlackRock is just buying up the extra so they don't have negative days, so it doesn't look as bad. I think you're correct with that. As for your first comment, selling Bitcoin 9 to buy the ETF, I'm not sure. And let me know if you'd be considering to do it. Just because if you already own the Bitcoin in a hardware wallet, I don't see the incentive to sell it and then buy an ETF where you don't have control over it. Even for a tax purpose, to me, it doesn't seem worth the risk. So if you can elaborate a little bit more as why you think that would happen or why people would do that.
I think because older people don't want to hold their own, and let's say they got in at the price it is now. And I'm just talking taxes, period, or I'm not talking self-custody being a great idea and everything else, because we know it is. I mean, most of mine is either in cold wallets or on a river or something like that. But say you got in at $60,000. Well, you sell it now, it's a minimal tax hit. You get it in the ETF. You can leave it for your children, your grandchildren, and the tax hits a lot less when you start taking it out. Maybe it doesn't make financial sense, but it has crossed my mind.
I don't know the tax advantage though, right? Capital gains is capital gains. So I don't know. I don't know what the advantage would be from an ETF. Also, you have to factor in like the maintenance cost that comes with an ETF. So you'll have to pay that as well. Whereas if it's just Bitcoin on a cold card or something, you know, they're obviously not charging you maintenance fees. I understand like the risk of like legacy, you know, in terms of like if you pass away, passing in, like getting your kids to be able to access it. You know, I'm going through like the life insurance steps right now for myself, and trying to explain to my wife how to use a cold card is a hurdle, to say the least. So I can understand like that aspect of it. If you're thinking it's like, you know, if you're near and, you know, thinking you're in the twilight days and it'll just be easier to transition an ETF versus, you know, knowledge of how to access it and stuff like that. I can understand that angle. But it does, you know, come with the risk of not owning your own keys and stuff like that.
That makes total sense. My only other comment, you were talking about people, you know, when will they start asking you about Bitcoin? And I also don't have many friends, and I quit trying to tell people about it. But you'll, however many you get that will ask you about it when it goes over 100,000, I'm guessing we'll get five times as many as soon as it goes under 100,000.
I think
just because they want to shit talk about it at that point once it goes back under.
No, I want to address the earlier we're talking about your legacy and passing it on to your children. I do think a lot of the custodial services have to do a better job of trying to get this implemented, because there is a huge risk of people passing away and that Bitcoin just being donated to the cause and it'll never be seen again. So for myself, I think there should be more options that make it easier for custodians to allow for the transfer upon someone's death. I haven't really, honestly, I haven't looked into it too much. My wife and I have a will, and we have specific details in there for our children and our executors. But short of them, you know, not understanding that, you know, they could be in some trouble if they're not able to figure it out.
Yeah, I have a close buddy, you know, fellow grunt that I served with that, you know, we kind of got into Bitcoin around the same time. So he's my backup plan in terms of accessing Bitcoin and stuff like that. Like, I guess I'll have all my seed phrase and stuff is here, but, you know, my wife, I trust him enough that my wife can be like, hey, like, what do I do with this? You know what I mean? And so if you can find somebody like that, that you can trust, definitely a good thing to articulate there.
And, I'm just a huge fan of multi-sig. So I would definitely encourage everybody who's doing their own self-custody to look into multi-sig, just for that extra security in case there's a bad actor within your family or something like that. You need more than just one key to access your stash.
Yeah, that's something I should probably look into. I admittedly don't know much about multi-sig or how to set it up, so that's definitely a blind spot for me. But that's also like a really cool thing if you are trying to leave it to, like, say you have three kids or something, you can leave each of them a key, so you need like two out of three or something to sign. That'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, and you just put them across the country, right? Or into different jurisdictions. And so you could have it where if someone, you know, broke into your house and had one of them, they weren't able to get all of your multi-sigs. So just kind of spreading them out. I'm a huge fan of Cold Card. And so I think the security features they have on there is just absolutely amazing. You know, they have the dummy wallets, they have the time release, the multi-sig. And then you need the multi-sig with an additional phrase on it. So even if they got your you know, both of your seed phrases, if they didn't know your additional word you had to add to it, they can't access it still. So I highly recommend, if someone's looking for a hardware wallet, to check out Cold Card. I think their products are amazing.
Yeah, and honestly, what pushed me, I started off with a, was it like the Nano or something? But what pushed me to cold card was like just the constant spamming of like, hey, look at this shitcoin we added. And it's like, I was not interested at all. So with cold card, it's nice. It's, you know, you get, you're not spammed by this stuff. And it just seems like, and anytime I see shitcoins, I just feel like something is going to go wrong. Like it's just an avenue for failure. So, you know, cold card being Bitcoin only and the way they handle everything from like the shipping and purchasing and all that stuff, I just like the way that it goes. So I definitely will second that recommendation.
I think the fact that cold card is open sourced is a huge selling point too, at least for me. I'm highly suspicious of other hardware wallets that are closed source. I don't know what's going on in the background. I don't know if it was like a Trezor wallet that had that feature where they could get your keys for you and it saved on the cloud or just all kind of
Ledger.
Ledger. Okay, thank you. Yeah. So, yeah, if you're looking at a hardware wallet, it doesn't have to be cold card, but make sure it's open source. People are going to vet that thing out.
Yeah, Block's got a, that's Jack Dorsey's, and correct me if I'm wrong, but they look like they have a really interesting one. And so if I was going to look into something else, that one, Blockstream, their Jade wallet, I know a lot of people like that. So there are good options, but I'm very familiar with the cold card.
Yeah, I also use the cold card too, so highly recommend it.
Yeah, that's at least three of us up here that are using cold card. So,
yeah. And so I just want to give a quick welcome to Bitcoin Carney and AC joining us. Good morning, gentlemen.
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Hey, what's up? Question on the multi-sig. I used to have a 3 of 5 with Casa, and I don't know who was speaking before about being so kind of anti-shitcoin, but even when they added Ethereum, I was like, I'm out, because I just couldn't deal with that. And I ended up getting a cold card, and I actually now think the 25th word might be the move, because it's just a lot less to manage. You're not having to juggle like 5-4 different wallets or even 3, and then where do you keep all the backup, you know, metal plates? And it's just like a lot, where if you just got your 24 and then keep your 25th word somewhere else, and you could have multiple copies of that, of both. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I like that play. I think it's very, it's easy because again, if they got your 24 words and they're able to get into it, you could put a fake amount in there. So it looks like they got your stack. But they don't have your main stack with that 25th word. And there's absolutely no way you can get to it. I don't know how many options there are, but I think it makes it substantially more secure by adding that 25th word.
I just want to say, like, I like that Bitcoin Carney said he was out when they added Ethereum. Like, that's me too. I'm that toxic Bitcoin maximalist. Like, if your business isn't Bitcoin only, I don't want anything to do with you. But you're just slowing down the revolution. All right, get all that junk out of here. I went to the Nashville conference and I walked up to these vendors, and the second they talked about something that wasn't Bitcoin, I said, thanks for your time, I'm out. I'm not even playing with it.
Yeah,
the 25th word is actually a phrase, right? It can be like a whole string of words.
Yep, you could make it, I think, as long as you want. And you could also have like infinite 25th words. If that, like, you could have multiple wallets, like the fake wallet, the real stash, playing money. Like, yeah, it's cool.
That's interesting. I gotta look into that too.
I just want to give a quick welcome to Jordan on the Operation Libertas handle. Good morning, sir. You still in North Carolina?
Yeah. Hey guys, I'm here with Mike and Shane, and we are getting ready to go run a mission. We're gonna go hike up to a top of one of the mountains here. It's right on the Tennessee-North Carolina border. And we're going to set up a Meshtastic repeater. And we believe the goal will be to connect Irwin, Tennessee to Burnsville, North Carolina to help establish a wider Meshtastic net. I don't know if you guys have seen the post that we shared on the BV handle. They went from 2 Meshtastic devices in this area to, I think, 61. We're up to 65 now. And we just keep handing these things out and building out the network. And hopefully this just kind of helps take it to the next level.
That's amazing. Do you guys want to give a quick update as to the speech? We mentioned everything a little bit earlier. I didn't see you guys listening. But do you want to give us a quick or lengthy, it doesn't matter for us, update as to everything going on there firsthand?
Yeah, real quick. I'm about to start driving, so let's see if Mike or Shane, if they can be heard. You guys want to give an update and see if they can even hear you?
Mike, you want to give your piece first?
I mean, I don't even know really where to start, because when we first got out here, the first thing, like, we've been mostly focused.
Hold on real quick. Can you guys hear Mike?
We can hear you all loud and clear.
Okay, perfect. So one of the issues out here is that a lot of the support and the assistance is going to individuals that are within almost immediate contact of the townships and the cities. So, like, what we've been primarily focusing on is getting generators out to those that are much more, I would say, isolated, like, particularly up in the mountains. So we've been doing that, and I mean, we've been working really heavily with the Christian Rangers, and then what was the name of Tim's group? It was Plain Compassion Crisis Response,
yep,
or something like that. So we've been just like continuing to do a lot of the stuff that you guys have been seeing us do, like in the Signal chats. Those of you that are a part of that, and then we're providing a lot of just connection and coordination and networking for a lot of the separate organizations that are that are out providing a lot of support but haven't been communicating. So I'll just stop there. Like, Shane, do you want to like continue with like a lot of the stuff you were talking about on the spaces last night?
Oh, one other update real quick on our current mission. We also have a Starlink Mini in the top of one of our rucks, and we're going to be using that to maintain comms while we move up through on top of this mountain.
That's awesome.
All right. So, morning, everybody. Been about over 2 weeks, I guess, on the ground out here now. And things have changed. You know, there's a lot of really good positive stuff that's going on out here. I think first thing I'd mention is the people out here are amazing, whether they're veterans, whether they're, you know, volunteers that, you know, don't really have a background in a lot of the things that we've been doing. The people have just, you know, really banded together. They're outpouring, and it's funny, you know, we talk about Appalachia just being one of those communities that's really strong to begin with. There's a lot of pride out here, which is kind of a double-edged sword that we also have to deal with. So when we're trying to get help to the locals out here, a lot of times they're like, hey, man, go give this to somebody else. Meanwhile, they're living on the side of a mountain that's partly washed away. Their house has been, you know, struck by trees from the tornadic activity that spanned off from the storm. And so sometimes it's hard to even give them help. So, you know, we've come up with new methods of you know, getting out there, helping them. We've also done something that I think is really interesting, is create a buddy system like we had in the military. So what I mean by a buddy system is a lot of these guys don't even know their neighbors. You know, neighbors are separated by, you know, hundreds of feet, not so much horizontally, but vertically out here, and they are tucked away in the hollers, and they don't know each other. So establishing even connections between local neighbors is one of the things that we've also been doing, and it's you know, it's interesting to watch, because, you know, we'll find one guy that has a vegetable farm, for instance, and another, you know, old man, and, you know, one old man's got comms and the young guy doesn't, but he's got food. And so to try to make that connection to help these guys get through the winter together is kind of one of the, you know, one of those things I think in terms of communication is somewhat overlooked in this networking event. So we're kind of doing networking at a not only a macro level, but also a micro level out here. And that's going to be, I think, the biggest thing. We've got, you know, a catastrophe on our hands, obviously, from the storm itself. But the second and third order effects that we were talking about last night, you know, the pneumonias, the lung diseases that are going to set in. The medical supplies that we're going to need for that, like nebulizers, where, you know, we can set up a nebulizer, hand off a nebulizer to a family, They can share that. They just need, you know, the medicine that goes in it, which is, you know, fairly easy to come by. And then the other side of that is just, you know, what Mike was saying is the immediate need out here is heat. Whether it's those little diesel generators that produce heat, which run forever, or the little heating buddies. I don't know what they call it, exactly what the name of it is, but they run on, you know, 1 ounce or 1 pound propane tanks, or they have conversions for 20 pound propane tanks. Those are the missions, and so we're running all that. We've got our ear to the ground for a lot of what's going on.
Hey Shane, you're starting to go into that weird place in the Matrix.
Better from your phone and connect to the static. Yeah. My phone's connected to the trigger.
Oh, all good. If it breaks up, you guys come back to us when we get our signal.
Hey, I think we're gonna have to. Yeah, I think we're gonna have to let you guys go. I can hear Jordan speaking right now, but it was coming in pretty choppy. But I want to say Godspeed, God bless you guys. Let us know if there's anything immediately we can do to assist, other than just spreading this message. It's really fun to be able to point people to showing what we can do, what Bitcoin can do for these communities, and how we're actually going out there and doing the proof of work. So again, I couldn't be prouder to be a part of this team. And so I just want to say thank you guys. There's something I wanted to touch on really quick that I see a lot of people mentioning, and I'd like to get thoughts from the panel up here. So the monthly treasury statement is supposed to be released on the 8th of every month, the 8th business day, I apologize. And so September's release has not been issued. They're 6 days late now, and there hasn't been any remarks or comments from the Treasury about the delay. So I would like to go ahead, before I give my opinions, anybody up here, give me their thoughts as to why would the Treasury want to delay this release 17 days before the election?
I don't know. It's kind of like, it's like the obvious like thing is like that comes to mind is like, it's not good, right? So they want to like hide it for, you know, the VP there. But it's like, do they have the audacity to like hold it out that, or maybe, you know, actually I was thinking, do they have the audacity to hold it out until, you know, November when the election is, but I guess that even if they hold it out for just a little bit and you get those early voters or the mail-in voters, I guess that's something for them, before like whatever comes out. But like, if that is the case, I would imagine it's like really bad that it'll have like market impact if they're like hiding something like that. But I don't know. I guess a bit above my pay grade, but you know, if I'm putting on my tinfoil hat, that's where my thoughts are going on it.
I agree with you, EMR. It's definitely above my pay grade, but when I look back at everything that's just kind of going on and just trying to make an assumption from that, going back to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, revising their numbers over the year, down 118,000 jobs. That's just not a little mistake. That's a huge mistake. We spent $500 billion, $500 billion over 3 weeks. And so our debt right now is at $35.7 trillion. So I would assume the reason that they are delaying this report is that it's a lot uglier than what they were forecasting, and they just want to try and limit some of that impact. If I'm going to go down that rabbit hole and make another assumption, I would think that this is maybe why they're just kind of punting Harris right now, and they don't really care how she's doing. I think we can all agree that her media blitz, which was supposed to kind of help her surge past Trump, was a complete failure, but there doesn't seem like they're really pushing to right the ship. And so maybe this is why they're doing that, just letting her crumble, because they know that no matter who's going to be elected, they're going to have a ton of crap to deal with in the economy. So that's the side I'm leaning on. Again, I don't think the economy is as strong as what everybody says it is. I believe that there's two different economies going on. You have the middle and lower class economy where everybody is just struggling. And then you have the upper class economy where they're not really having too much trouble. And so I think things might get a little rough in the economy over the next couple of months.
Yeah, I mean, I'll again point to that book, When Money Dies, just because it really shows you how like money will flee into markets and stuff like that as the currency is collapsing. And, you know, the people that feel it last are the, you know, typically the wealthiest, because like the stocks and whatever, like investments will inflate with the currency. The people that feel it the most initially are those at the lower end that don't have investments. They're living paycheck to paycheck. They're going to suffer the most. And you know, the left often likes to talk about like the wage, like, or the, what do they call it? Like income gap or wage gap or something, like between like the richest people and like everybody else. And they try to, you know, blame it on this or that and blah, blah, blah. In reality, it's the inflationary nature of our money that's always going to be the result. So if they really wanted to end it, they'd have to, you know, end the Federal Reserve, and go back to a sound currency. Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. There is, like, as we get later and later into the game, you know, the people lower down will feel it the most. I think it'll be, you know, at least if we're looking at, you know, the outcomes, I think the closer you are to building something real, the probably better off you'll be, like, in the short term after something goes badly, because, you know, you're making something tangible that people probably need. So, like, you know, at the lowest level, like a farmer, like, they should be probably okay because people need food. And if you're making software, maybe not as okay. You know, I don't know how many people need my data skills in a collapsing environment, but I can work with some wood on the side, I guess. So,
yeah, especially with the development of AI and what it's being able to do. There might be a lot of those jobs that might be at risk. But with the, if there is a recession that's coming through, I tend to believe with Mark Moss, and he says that there's going to be a melt up. People are going to just throw money into the stock market. And so you'll see the economy that's going down, but prices in the stock market and hard assets are going to increase just because people see the writing on the wall. So for me, if we do hit a recession, I don't think it's going to necessarily affect the price of Bitcoin in a negative way. It might take a quick little hit, but I expect it to keep trudging along just because everybody else can see what the United States government is going to have to do to get out of that mess. And we all know that they're going to have to print their way out. And so that just means that hard assets become more valuable. So if you haven't seen Mark Moss talk about that, he posts a lot of videos. But check him out and listen to him speak on his theory on the melt up during the next recession. But really quick, while I have all of your attention, I want to give a quick shout out to our partners and a big thank you. Punchblade, I see you in the audience. Let's get a fist pump out there. We were talking about cold card hardware wallets. Stamp your seed phrase on a metal plate. Check them out at punchplate.com. Solo Satoshi, open source Bitcoin mining at solosatoshi.com. Paladin Tower Tactics, professional firearms training at paladintowertactics.com. And restock your ammo at blacksheepammo.com. So this Treasury report getting delayed, I don't think it'll be a good thing, but only time will tell what's going to happen with that. But I do think we're hitting the banana republic phase of the United States, and other leaders in other countries are definitely witnessing it. I just saw on my Twitter feed, Putin was talking about the decline of the U.S. dollar and the U.S. country. The one I wanted to talk about today, though, was Bukele gave a speech at the United Nations General Assembly 2 weeks ago. And in that speech that is now just kind of getting circulated, he describes exactly the destruction of the West and specifically America. And how can we call ourselves a free country when we're imprisoning our political rivals and we're silencing free speech? How can we say we live in a safe country when we can't even walk the streets of our cities without getting robbed, without getting murdered? The homelessness crisis that's going on is unprecedented. So If you haven't seen it, it was in Spanish, and I couldn't find any translatable videos that would have been working well on this space. But definitely recommend just going on there on Twitter and just Googling Bukele's United Nations speech and just see what he has to say, because it's really powerful and it's really eye-opening if you're kind of living in the dark or fantasy land of what's going on in the United States.
One thing that I've been like keeping an eye on is like our strategic petroleum reserves. You ever look at that, like how low it is compared to pre-2022? It's pretty wild. Like, I feel like that's going to be, or it could be like a catalyst for something going worse for us. Just because like that was kind of our, I feel like that's like our control and leverage against like OPEC actions and stuff like that. So like, if we keep burning through it, or if we don't have it there, then, you know, I think that's, I think it was established after like 1970s when Saudi Arabia embargoed us. And, you know, we're kind of like, so it was established for that, right? And then we have like the shenanigans we did with Russia with the reserve currency and stuff. So like, we kind of threatened anybody that's holding the dollar, which or treasuries, you know, which includes Saudi Arabia. It just seems like, you know, we're just hemorrhaging all of our leverage out. I posted a shot from Y charts on the, I'll post it to Nest. We can just see how low it is comparatively. You know, it's like half of what it was. The chart is actually kind of terrible. It makes it look like it's like non-existent, but it's about a 50% decline there. So it's just kind of interesting that we burned up that much of it. We've recovered a little bit this year, but I don't know how long that'll sustain us. And I think it's also another thing to note, like in the inflation numbers, like energy prices is about 10% of the, you know, the fake inflation calculations that they do. So by burning this up and, you know, putting this into the market, they're also helping suppress like the official inflation numbers.
Yeah, but the price of, oh, go ahead, Bitcoin Carney.
Yeah, I think they're totally doing it just to keep the price of gas down before the election. Cause if, I mean, where I'm at, if they weren't doing that, we'd have like $6-$7 a gallon, and that might flip California, you know, like, I think it's totally about the election. But what you're saying about hiding those treasury numbers and now, you know, the fake inflation numbers, it just makes me kind of realize, I don't know, I've been on this kick the past few months. Oh, I don't know if I want to go down this rabbit. Just who we are, who the U.S. chose to ally with during World War II. Like, it's communists, you know, and I think they were buddies with the guys at the top of our government, and we've kind of been living in a socialist country for the past 70 years, whatever it is. But I also just read the Gulag Archipelago, and it's just kind of like in the Orwell vein, if you've not read the Gulag. But you look around and you realize like, oh yeah, it all just starts with tiny little lies. And I don't know, I feel like I'm rambling here, but
yeah. Yeah, I mean, I see people make the comparisons when like Matt Miller's giving briefings and stuff and just blatantly lies. You know, people are pointing out how like reminiscent it is of like the Soviet Union telling their people just blatant lies and just expecting everybody to just go with it, you know? And we see that not just Matt Miller, but a lot of people in the White House. You know, the way, I forget what that woman's name was that was there, but she was so, I don't even know if she's still there. Started with a K, I forget what it was, but you know, she would just tell blatant lies, and all of them are doing it. There's that fat dude that, I don't remember if he's State Department or something else. But he's always telling lies. Like, they just lie right to our face, you know, and the reporters are just supposed to sit there and accept it. And most of them don't even ask questions. Like, you know, the guy from the Gray Zone, there was a clip of him circling around the other day because he called them out on their bullshit. But he was like, you know, there's like one or like he probably won't get invited back, but there's a couple other ones that push back. But for the most part, they just, you know, eat it up and take it. And I think it was like Matt Taibbi's book, Hate Inc., where he talks about how like maybe it's one of his interviews, he talks about how like the the reporting cycle goes, where they basically just get a piece of paper and then they just, you know, put their own little spin narrative on it and then kick it back out as like news, but they're not actually doing any like investigation or reporting or anything like that. So I don't know, maybe a tangent, but kind of reminded me of some of the other talking points people were talking about, like the similarities there.
I think it just, I don't think the reporters are pushing back because they're all owned by the same, like all the news outlets are all owned by the same people. So you're only going to get maybe just a little bit of pushback to fit whatever news agency, that whatever side they lean on. But for the most part, no one's going to be questioning them because they have their allegiance.
Yeah, I work in advertising too. And when I first heard that pharma buys 70% of their ads, it's like you really realize you're just listening to your advertisements. Like no news agency would ever go against the people putting money in their pocket. It's not necessarily about who owns like MSNBC or CNN. It's like who is paying them. That's their advertiser. They're not going to bite the hand that feeds them. So it doesn't even need to be like super nefarious, like dark, shadowy, secret people. It's like it's all out there in the open. The same people who own big pharma own the military industrial complex. Like it's all, yeah, it's all one thing.
Yeah, yeah. I was just going to say that if you look at like the actual ownership, like you can go on any like investment website and you can see the percentage that's institutional owners. Those are all the same institutional owners, you know, across, you know, whether it's Lockheed or whatever, like the parent company of CNN is, you know, they're all, you can see the institutional investor owners, and it's all the same, you know, like, so they're all, that's why you don't see pushback on CNN or Fox News about like our different like wars and stuff. You know, they might narratively take a different tone, but there's nobody actually like demanding that we stop fighting wars or that we, you know, there's no real investigations on, you know, pharmaceutical stuff. Like there's nobody talking about, you know, any of the pick one of the things that like RFK talks about all the time, the health consequences or stuff like that. Especially like the food stuff, like, which is like the craziest to me, like, okay, like you can probably make arguments for, you know, vaccines or whatever. But like the food stuff, I can't imagine anybody like that's on the side of like, no, like give me plastics in my food, you know? So it's crazy that doesn't get picked up more. But it makes sense when you realize that they're all paid. They're all essentially owned by the same people. And like you said, the ad money has to come in. So.
Yeah. And remember they came out just last year and said that Cheerios and Corn Flakes are a healthier option, ranked higher on their food standard than whole foods such as red meat, steak, eggs, and cheese. So we had Matthew Lisick on the show last week or the week before. So if you haven't listened to it, highly recommend going back and listening to that episode. It was really good. I highly recommend his book, Fiat Foods. It's kind of a 1-2 punch. I'm starting to pass to friends and acquaintances now. I pass out the Bitcoin Standard. And then once they read that, I pass them on Fiat Foods, just because the amount of corruption he exposes in his book, it's really terrifying. And it doesn't, he covers the food industry in it, but you can apply that same thing to everything else because it's all intertwined.
Yeah, I don't know if I'll ever look at graham crackers the same way, but
yes. Yeah, it's crazy. I highly recommend going back, listen to the episode at the very least, but definitely go out and buy that book. And I think that's one of the interesting thing that Bitcoin did for me is it just opened my eyes at how corrupt the food system is. And I can tell you firsthand experience, I was born and raised in Canada. My first 18 years of life lived up there. I had our own garden. We killed our own animals. When I moved down to the United States, I could instantly tell there was a difference in food quality, and whatever they're spraying on the vegetables and fruit really affects me in a negative way. I almost get like an allergic reaction. But it doesn't happen when I go back home to Canada, and it doesn't happen if I go down to Mexico on vacation. I can eat anything without any reactions. So there's definitely stuff they're putting in our food that has adverse health effects on us. But we're at the top of the hour, so does anybody have any final comments, concerns, questions, remarks they want to get out, send us off to the weekend on a good note? All right, I'll go ahead and do it. I think we're coming on Monday morning with a higher Bitcoin price. I've got a good feel and I can feel it. It looks like it's getting ready to bounce. And so I predict a higher price. You can hold that to me on Monday morning when we get back on the show. You can call me out or you can praise me for being right. But I think it'll be a fun weekend for Bitcoin. But I want to give a thank you to everybody who's listened today. Everybody in the audience, Death and Bitcoin, Nathan, LBN, Ace, DA Sales, Jeeves. You guys, it really means a lot to me that you're listening every single day. To everybody else I didn't mention, there's just too many of you to list you all, but I see you all out there. Everybody who joined on the panel, Eomar, Hunter, Bitcoin Carney, Witz, AC, Jordan, Shane, and Mike, I really appreciate you all coming up here and helping us. And of course, Jacob for taking care of everything on the background. Make sure you tune in to us next Monday at 10 a.m. Eastern time. We're doing this again, covering everything that happened over the weekend. Tuesday night, we will have a Bitcoin video podcast. I did get confirmation of that. I think we're going to be just doing an update of what's going on with Operation Gabriel. I don't think we'll have a specific guest, though, but stay tuned for more. And again, if we've paused all the donations, so the link is paused, but please go ahead and retweet it just because it shows a thread of everything that we're doing with Operation Gabriel. So the best thing we can do is just keep spreading that message. Again, there's still a lot of work that has to get done for everybody affected with that storm. And we're not going to quit till everybody's good to go. So I want to thank you all again for tuning in. And go out there and have a fantastic weekend and crush it.